connection is too remote to be meaningful. But Imam Muhammad also pointed out that the name Africa is clearly associated with at least two Europeans, Leo and Scipio Africanus, mapmaker, explorer, and military commander, respectively. Well, that's important. Good. I hope Iman changes the name of Africa. What he needs to do, he never covers any of the developments in his paper anymore in the fascist regime of Zaire that's upheld by the CIA and tried to overthrow the People's Socialist Revolutionary Government of Angola. He never even mentions Angola. He never will discuss Ethiopia. And he never discusses Zambia, Tanzania, no, or Mozambique, or Zimbabwe. No, he plays it very careful. He talks about how Africa was named. What the hell does it make any difference? While little historical data appears to readily be available on the mapmaker Africanus, it's well known that Scipio, a Roman general, gained fame during the Roman Wars against Carthage between 264 B.C., and 146 B.C., 146 years before the bastard Jesus. According to most historical accounts, it was the Romans who first referred to the inhabitants around Carthage, present-day Tunisia, as Africa. Very great history. We want to remember that. We'll remember it, but it's not that kind of history that we really need to know. We need to know the history of working-class struggle and what makes the elements of revolution possible, like the organizing of trade unions and the development of a strong socialist party and strong Marxist-Leninist parties, independent trade unions. You need to study the social conditions that will enhance revolution and change and bring peace to a troubled planet and allow the two out of three babies going to bed hungry to eat. Then we will study Mr. Iman Wallace D. Muhammad's background on Africa. Anyway, he said Scipio's defeat of Hamilcar Barca Hannibal in the Second Punic War, 218 B.C., that, although the many theories have been advanced to explain the appellation of the continent, for the continent is well known that it was only after Scipio's defeat of Hamilcar Barca, that is Hannibal, in the Second Punic War, 218 B.C., that the term Africa began to appear in wider context. While some historians suggest that Rome simply picked up the name Africa from the Phoenicians or the Carthaginians themselves, and some others infer that the name is associated with a general in the army of Alexander the Great, the prominent association of the Africanus gen plebeian clan in Rome clearly stands out. At least some of this history you should remember, that the name Africa comes out of a mapmaker in Rome, and Scipio, who was a mapmaker, explorer, and military commander, Scipio Africanus, and he was a mapmaker, explorer, and military commander, respectively, in the state of Rome. It went through great progressive changes and then went through the decline of all civilizations, and has been compared quite realistically to the United States today, as being close to what Rome was just before it fell. Actually, to Scipio Africanus, Cornelius Scipio, who defeated Hannibal, and Scipio Acriminonus, who purportedly destroyed Carthage in 146 B.C., are prominently associated with the naming of Africa. Leo Africanus is said to have later placed his name on maps, which he drafted on the whole continent, thus implanting the Roman name Africanus onto the continent. According to noted historian Yosef ben Jochanan, Africa has been called by the ancients Olympia, Helfer, Oceania, Corfe, Ortigia, Abyssinia, and Ethiopia at one time or another. It was called Libya and Africa by the Greeks and Romans, he said. For historians, the nature of this aspect of history should present an interesting challenge. For Bilalians, the thrust for a return to original and meaningful names should be our most important quest in America today. Now, isn't that really profound? That should be our most important quest, with 60% unemployment in the black community, drugs eating away that have been funneled in by the CIA through the U.S. ambassador in Colombia, so the money can be taken from the profits of the drugs to kill our babies in Zimbabwe in their schools and torture them. Destroy the lives of our young black minds and Indian minds in USA, some 60%. That's really fantastic that the black historians think that our most important quest should be to find meaningful names. And it should be heightened as the issue is taken up, ultimately all meaningless, demeaning, or otherwise useless names for human beings will be repudiated. Something black historians have avidly urged. Well, at least you got a little background on how Africa was named. Whatever the hell else, I don't know. I'm sorry I gave you the article. I did give you a few of the names of the countries, which I do think is good to remember what Ghana used to be. Called was the Gold Coast. Zaire was known before independence as the Belgian Congo. A dreaded real fascist tyranny that's still there, imposed, though they have their black puppet, but still, that's the land, Belgian Congo or Zaire, where Patrice Lumumba was murdered when he promised to bring the first pro-Soviet, pro-Russian, socialist, black independent nation in Africa. Kenya, known earlier as British East Africa, and Tanzania, formerly labeled French West Africa. Now that, I think, is important that you know the root backgrounds. For instance, Tanzania's family socialist government supporting the Patriotic Front against the sellout Ian Smith regime in Rhodesia or Zimbabwe, and three Uncle Tom religious leaders, Bishop Muzoroy and others. It's important to realize that Tanzania had a French background, and it's fighting in a country in Zimbabwe that had an English-speaking background, or Rhodesia, that is, known by white people, and the Kenya, known earlier as British East Africa, is also identifying with Ethiopia. It had an Italian background of colonialism. I'm talking about their colonialism, those that dominated them before. And the Ghana, the Gold Coast, we need to know some of those backgrounds of the African independent states. And look at your map. The engineer Christian has made. Comrade Christian will be making maps of the Caribbean, a large map of Guyana, so that we can really know all we need to know. Today, the Soviet Union have warned the United States to abandon development of the neutron bomb and has threatened to give an appropriate answer to such a challenge by a new superweapon that will have dimensions of control of space, said the Soviet Union, if the weapon actually is deployed. This is the first official significance, according to the Chicago Tribune, that indeed the Soviets do have in their possession the laser beam that can knock out all incoming missiles into Soviet countries that ally themselves with them or their own mainland. It was the third such warning in 4 months by Moscow to the United States and its NATO allies. Like the previous warnings, the official statement is getting sterner by the TASS news agency, but it stopped short of actually saying that the Soviet Union would develop its own superweapon in abundance. It did suggest, however, this time that they would make neutron weapons themselves. The neutron bombs, as much as they abhorred them, would have to be made by implication because of the U.S. militaristic designs. If the NATO North American Treaty Organization, a fascist group of nations that support USA, England, France, West Germany, fascist Germany, Norway, and USA, if those member countries make their choice in favor of starting the production of the neutron weapon in Europe, all the nations of NATO are in Europe or Scandinavia, such a decision would face the Soviet Union with the absolute necessity to give an appropriate answer by, indeed, taking up the challenge to build a neutron bomb and to press ahead. We are fearful, said TASS, in the area of weapons that are so destructive that the human mind cannot even conceive of their destructiveness. Freedom fighters are holding all points in the battle in Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe freedom fighters have gotten increasing aid from even some of the tribes and churches led by the three Uncle Tom black leader sellouts that have joined in with the Jan Smith's fascist Rhodesian regime that imposes its will on the majority of black people who look to the patriotic front in what is rightfully by African name called Zimbabwe. The Secretary General noted that the UN took the lead in aiming at a settlement of a one-man, one-vote rule in Rhodesia, which has some 173,000 Caucasians, but 607 million Africans. Can you imagine this? Some 42 times more blacks than white. And then the nerve that all these years and years they have been dominated by a white monster like Ian Smith, the prime minister, who's a pirate who took over by force, even against the will of his Commonwealth authority. He was a member of the Commonwealth, a member of the British Commonwealth. England refused to recognize his government, and he broke away and set up a pirate regime. What nerve that he can hope to impose his will upon black people that outnumber whites in Zimbabwe, or what the whites prefer to call Rhodesia, some 40 to 1. Didn't realize the statistics were that staggering. He said that patriotic front troops who have waged a five-year freedom war, that is, Secretary General Mr. Waldheim, Kurt Waldheim, who fears the war in Zimbabwe or Rhodesia, will continue to endanger world peace unless Zimbabwe patriotic front freedom fighters are brought into the peace process outlined by the world body. He said also the patriotic front troops have waged a five-year freedom war, and their supporters in Africa have refused to accept this solution, as they have the internal settlement signed between Zimbabwe Prime Minister Ian Smith. Now, you don't do well to call that. Here's a black newspaper calling Zimbabwe Prime Minister Ian Smith. It's Rhodesian Prime Minister, because the Zimbabweans, 3 to 1, are in total support of Joshua Nkoma and Robert Mugabe, the leaders of the Patriotic Front. He should never be called the Prime Minister of Zimbabwe. Even the black newspaper, Sun Reporter, has no respect, no self-respect. Anyway, he said it was signed between Zimbabwe Prime Minister Ian Smith and three moderate Zimbabwe religious leaders. I greatly fear, said the United Nations General Secretary Kurt Waldheim, we should know these people, he said, I greatly fear that as long as these elements do not agree with the terms of the settlement, the problem cannot be solved, and the tragic conflict will continue, Mr. Waldheim said. He said, I'm immensely fearful that it will lead us to the Third World War. Such a development would be a disaster, not only for the countries and peoples of the region, but possibly also for most of the Northern Hemisphere and Western civilization. Mr. Waldheim pledged his utmost efforts towards conciliating the present differences between the Zimbabwean leaders. It would indeed be ironical if the United Nations were not able to make a contribution in what should now be the final stage of concluding a peaceful and durable settlement in Zimbabwe, Mr. Waldheim said. He also said no solution to the problem of independence for the former German territory of Southwest Africa called Namibia by Africans will succeed unless the Southwest African People's Organization, SWAPO, is involved in the settlement. And it looks like they will be, and that they've been able to successfully assassinate the puppet leader of the German fascist-controlled territory formerly called Southwest Africa, now called Namibia. He expressed concern, that is, the General Secretary, Secretary General of the United Nations, Kurt Waldheim, expressed concern over the Ogaden Desert War between Ethiopia and Somalian freedom fighters, as he calls them. But we know the Ethiopians are the freedom fighters. This has been brought on record by even nations independent like Cyprus and the Foreign Minister of England. And even Andrew Young said that justice was on the side of Ethiopians and that Somalia had committed an act of aggression. Andrew Young, sellout Uncle Tom, United Nations ambassador from the United States, trying to hold on, which he eventually will lose his job, according to our foreign minister, friend. He said, yes, Somalia did invade Ethiopia, the Horn of Africa. Yes, Ethiopia has the right to call on any nation it wants for assistance when its life is in jeopardy, its sovereignty is being attacked. But he said the trouble with Cuba and Russia was they exported violence, thus demeaning, Young was demeaning black people as not capable of fighting their own revolution. That nor did he say anything at all about the violence that has been imposed or exported upon the Ethiopians by aiding the Somalian reactionary leaders through U.S. taxes, corporate capital, ruling class money through the CIA funneled through Egypt. Nothing was said about that kind of violence. Mr. Young is being very careful to be the good Uncle Tom these days. Anyway, the Secretary General of the United Nations said he had been urged to allow the Organization of African Unity a chance to settle the fighting in the world's largest current conflict, which, by the way, has been successfully terminated, it seems, at this moment by the brave Ethiopian Socialist People's Republic through the outright military and economic assistance of the Cuban and Socialist People, who are always the vanguard of Marxist-Leninist and on the front lines of world liberation. We're glad for that, aren't we? We're glad for that indeed. Atlanta Public Safety Commissioner A. Reginald Eaves has been indicted for fraud, and unfortunately, Mr. Jackson, the black mayor of Atlanta, unable to see that they've been after his ass for years, is going to go along with it. Mr. Eaves is getting no support in the black community, but he was the most powerful person that led to the election of the first black mayor of Atlanta. So when they get through with him, then will come Mr. Jackson. And he said that even in Lieutenant Governor Dimely's book, but no one wants to stand up until they come for them. We ought to bring it on our lips every day. They came for the Jews and no one lifted a hand. That was a Protestant minister speaking, Niemöller. They came for the Jews and I didn't do anything because I didn't like the Jews. They came for the communists and I certainly didn't like communists and I did nothing. They came for the trade unions and again I did nothing because being a clergyman, a preacher, I didn't need to be in a union. They came for the Catholics and I did nothing also because I'd always been prejudiced against the Catholics. But when they got around to coming for me, said Pastor Niemöller, under the dreaded Nazi murderous fascist regime of the Third Reich, under Adolf Hitler that killed some 7 million in concentration camps, mostly gas chambers. Pastor Niemöller said, when they came for me, there was no one left to do anything. That's the case with Mayor Jackson. They've come for the most important black politician in Atlanta, Atlanta Public Safety Commissioner A. Reginald Eaves. But they're not yet put out their bony finger to take Mayor Maynard Jackson in and charge him with some crime. He's just being smeared by the press now. So no coalition is being formed to defend Mr. Eaves. Typical, typical, typical. Registration is falling off in all poor black, Indian, and white neighborhoods as people are losing, said the New York Times, their faith in the voting process. Zach Anderson and Joe Spear point out that the president may be in trouble because he threatened to threatened to veto and did $462 million to build an Air Force A B-1 bomber, which had no defense capabilities and no offensive faculty to support the United States. It was just a boondoggle to make some corporations richer. It is estimated by Jack Anderson that that is one of the reasons he may be coming under serious attack these days. He also mentions that Mexico has become extremely disillusioned with the United States over the increased border patrol of the Ku Klux Klan and the distinct racism of immigration policies. Thus, Mexican troops that formerly were destroying poppy fields, which supplied heroin for the United States, The brown heroin, known as Mexican mud, is worth billions of dollars each year on the U.S. black market, has now ceased to give the United States any support. Out of their disgust for United States practices in general about third world peoples. So heroin, Mexican heroin, poppies, making the Mexican people some money, will continue to be grown and shipped. Why not? The evil, evil bastard ambassador to Colombia from the United States was using his good office in such an evil way. Well, I'll give you more news later on in the day. I can't think of anything too much to say. It said the problem of child abuse in all public schools was named by the president's office, President Carter's office on U.S. Children Bureau statements, that every State of the Union's now reporting a frightening level of increase in suspected child abuse and neglect. In Kokomo, Indiana, as I told you, several little girls had their titties cut off, their breasts lacerated and wounded, and little boys had their penises cut off. For what reason? Who knows? No reason. No reason at all. Just because America is filled with violence to its teeth. Rise in cesarean births may increase risks to mothers, doctors say. Providence, Rhode Island, UPI. Two Brown University researchers are concerned that increased use of cesarean section during the delivery of babies in the United States is increasing the risk of death to mothers. Citing an 11-year study, Dr. John R. Everard and Edwin M. Gold called for unremitting surveillance of cesarean sections in the United States to determine how the procedure is affecting the death rate that is fastly increasing among pregnant mothers in the United States. Cesarean section, making an operating incision through the mother's abdomen and womb to remove the baby, is used in some 16.4% of all births in Rhode Island. Compared, my God, that is an outlandish statistic. Why are they doing cesarean? Again, it's the means of making more money. Doctors are concerned about money. These two doctors, kind of honest, though didn't get coverage in anything but the black press, said medical advances have allowed physicians to shift emphasis from preserving life at delivery to preventing delivery-related injuries to the infant. We are concerned that in our enthusiasm to do well by the baby, we may be losing perspective and fail to do well by the mother, Dr. Everard said. Their study shows that there were some 162,656 births in the state of Rhode Island between 65 and present. Of that total, 22,941 high rate were by the somewhat complicated procedure operation of cesarean section. Now, 19 of the mothers died, representing a rate of nearly 12 per 10,000, higher death rate than you have here in this country. During the same period, the maternal rate, death rate that is, the death of mothers following natural deliveries, was only 1/4 of 1% of 10,000, or 1 out of 40,000 in Rhode Island, which has a higher standard of medical care than usual. So cesarean sections increase the chances of death to the mother by some 48 times, according to Dr. Everett and Gold, 48 times greater risk of death in child delivery by cesarean section. Little to worry if you do as you are told, follow instructions, show good attitudes, gratitudes, produce, show interest in building up the collective. You're in good hands and wonderful protection. Doctors Everard and Gold hold joint appointments at the Brown University Medical School and Women and Infants Hospital. Something for us to think about in terms of whether we ever resort to cesareans. flu strains on the increase to a frightening rate throughout the nation, according to UPI. There are three different flu strains afflicting the American public at the same time, crippling schools and industries, closing them down, all of the states, reaching from South Dakota to the Virgin Islands, out in the territories of the Pacific. The National Center for Disease Control said Friday the rate of illness and the number of deaths caused by two of the flu viruses, A. Texas and A. Victoria, is very high indeed. However, officials said the third strain, the Russian flu, continues to spark frightening outbreaks among young people in the nation's high schools, colleges, military installations, and factories throughout the states. The Russian flu has spread to all 9 geographic regions of the country. That is now 46 of the 50 states, and 2 major cities were just crippled totally, New York and the District of Columbia. The CDC said despite close surveillance, there still have been no documented community outbreaks that could be substantiated in Atlanta of the Russian strain. However, it is spreading like wildfire over the United States. And also federal health officials expect such outbreaks will take place in the weeks ahead. This is going to be one of the worst flu seasons in U.S. history. To that end, drug manufacturers are preparing, hopefully, successful vaccine for protecting against the A Russian or USSR virus. $15 million federally sponsored immunization program for high-risk individuals pending congressional approval probably would begin late this summer or early fall, because some congressmen are beginning to fear they better spend out a little money for flu prevention as it's crippling the productive capacity of the nation. Well, I think, as I said, I've given you a reasonable coverage. People's rally town form promptly at 7. I think we can make it 7:15. 7:15, 7:15. People's socialist classes. Socialist classes, you must be in your class. You must find out from coordinators exactly what class you belong in and remain the class you were assigned last week until changed. Said TV ads, according to the Sun Reporter, proven by caucus of psychiatrists to be causing mayhem, bloodshed, and violence. Skidding U.S. dollar, no mystery at home, said the Washington Post. The falling dollar is a riddle to most Americans, but it is not an obscure economic theory. It is a fact that means more inflation, means higher cost of living, and a lower standard of living unless the trend is reversed immediately. When the United States buys more foreign goods than it now has to because the U.S. doesn't have rich land like we have to build up for production to meet the needs of all of its people, most of its beautiful acreage is turned into asphalt jungles or big, tall buildings for the corporations. So when the United States buys more foreign goods than it sells overseas, which is the case, it's like opening a charge account. The import of foreign oil, cars, and other goods is charged. For a while, Americans can go on living in the old lifestyles in debt up to the neck, but eventually the bills going to have to be paid. The bills for record balance of trade deficits are due now. The payments will be made by American consumers and businesses, hopefully by spending more but getting less because prices are higher. Putting off buying a new home because they're out of the reach of even the upper middle class, or a new car for a while, or settling for a cheaper or used model. Postponing that once-in-a-lifetime trip to Europe or Asia. It is estimated that only 3% of the normal visitors to other countries in the summer from USA abroad, only 3 out of the 100 that normally take vacations abroad will be able to afford to do so in the United States. It's a gloomy picture. The comparison is not so direct or simple as explained here. But in effect, the amount of value the dollar uses or loses against the currencies of other countries, which is losing its value, particularly against the Japanese yen, in the West German fascist Deutschmark, Swiss franc, French franc, and the English pound. And this loss of value of the dollar against the currencies of these countries that we once were working to liberate them from communism, and now their capitalism is turned against U.S. homespun variety. Anyway, in effect, the amount of value the dollar loses against the currencies of both countries is a symbolic of lifestyle erosion now in progress in USA. The dollar has lost an estimated 5% last month. One immediate result of the decline was a price increase of about $50 for subcompact American cars yesterday. The cause of the declining dollar and living standard are complex. They include excessive dependence on imports, particular annual consumption of $45 billion worth of foreign oil, low workers' pay and productivity, centralized industry that effectively eliminates price competition, and federal and state governments spending more money than they collect in taxes. Remember, this is a moderate newspaper, not a socialist one that I'm reading or commenting from. International transactions only reflect the value of the dollar and how much America's currency can buy in the world. The impact is not only on imports. However, as more dollars get into foreign hands, it increases their buying power in the United States. This new source of demand for North American goods sends prices up in a classic supply-demand pattern that better than half of the American public can now not afford the consumer products. West Germans, Japanese, and Arabians have used their surplus dollars for investments in real estate. Wise indeed. They've invested in real estate, banks, for businesses, but as the supply of dollars go wider, there will be increasing purchases of consumer goods, particularly food. The result will be higher domestic prices for Americans. I wanted to give you a little idea of what we're talking about, why the dollar is plummeting. Because the United States has to buy more foreign goods. It can't produce them. Has to buy more food. It's not able to produce it because our land is suffering erosion from the terrible drowning rains and then the 3 years prior drought, particularly heavily hit in the Midwest and California. So we had to go. Stand by. I was talking to someone else here for a moment. We need to realize that we are going to falter as long as we do not have a country that with acreage to produce its own food. Now the United States is forced to buy foreign goods much more than it can sell overseas. It has to buy more than it can sell. And then it has to buy on credit, and that's in trouble. That's why we will not see direct interference, in my opinion, but the United States is in too much trouble. Its economic picture is bleak and ready to fall. Even though they're boycott, and some of it out of financial necessity, U.S. is just bankrupt. Now Georgetown is on a 23 and one quarter hour blackout each day. For 23 and one quarter hours, for the last 6 days, Georgetown has had no lights. But the people have kept their spirits high, the citizens of Guyana. Our people are not bothered by it at all. We've got some tough working crew in there. But I would give you the bit of news about developments in the world at large and at home. Also remember the horrifying second juggler attack on a leading U.S. congressman, Congressman Miller, the only consistent progressive white congressman from New York, was set up in a horrifying charge to mortify his family and children. He was accused of soliciting sex from two boys for homosexual purposes. Conveniently, there were federal police around to catch him. He said he didn't even speak to the two boys, but he is being charged with this crime of seeking to molest two boys for homosexual purposes. The pattern continues. Last week, Charles Diggs, prominent black politician, head of the Subcommittee on African Affairs, founder of the Black Caucus, overnight discredited, faces 175 years in prison because he's black. Not because he's a socialist. He's black. All of his businesses, funeral parlors, and other things that he owned did not do him any service. See the trends, note the trends, and realize how fortunate we are to be here and produce the land. Be inspired to grow everything, like the little child last night, Dove Lundquist. Every child should be inspired to plant all around the cottages, the houses, and every square inch. Because I'm going to really remember children like Dove Lundquist and give them great praise. And the grave, great trooper Aurelia Anderson, senior, comrade Aurelia Anderson, the loss of a child, but back in the States outside the cause, but didn't even bat an eye and went forward. To those true heroes, heroines and heroes of our socialist liberation movement, we salute you this afternoon. We urge others to follow the example and produce every bit of land. Pick up everything. The Russian ambassador and delegation can come any day. Will probably come right after the Prime Minister leaves the first of next week for the Soviet Union, but they will not be accompanying him. We did talk to the Prime Minister's chief aide, who's going to the Soviet Union. He was highly supportive of our work, praised our performance at the cultural show. We were told by the foreign minister that we have five major contributions into Guyanese life. Production, role model in terms of no crime, that our people come and go and do not get involved in criminal activities. The seventh, eighth population, largest population center in Guyana with no crime, unheard of, said he. Also, our cultural event, the only free show ever put on in the cultural auditorium, and impressed the people. The foreign minister said, from the top of the government to the very lowest echelons of the working class, that really are our brothers and sisters. He said the fact that we'd brought no trial into their courts except the one issue which they clearly understood over Dana and John. That little trial had been brought to them and we'd given much. Well, we shall see if they interpret this days to come in steady support. Whatever happens, looks to me favorable things are on the horizon as the Prime Minister and several of his cabinet ministers, Dr. Burnham and his delegation, are on the way to the Soviet Union, the brave North Korean communist administration that was bombed practically into the Stone Ages but won against the Yankee hordes. By the way, the Korean ambassadors will be coming this weekend. North Korean ambassador will be coming to dinner at our headquarters in Jonestown. Each day we're building stronger and stronger socialist, Marxist-Leninist alliances. We are here not to create difficulties for U.S., but to represent the United States well as model citizens. But we are also here to keep our sovereignty, our peace, and our freedom, and our independence. We will not be dictated again to by the monopoly capitalists. Racists will not destroy us here. We have destiny of our own life in control. We are not afraid, as the Ogala Sioux says, when they give their war cry, this is a good day to die. It's a good day to live, and our children are going to live a long while, is our dream, our ambition, and our pursuit. But we are prepared, because we have land 30 miles round to protect, to share with our good Guyanese neighbors our medical services, and build solidarity, the PNC and the working class, bring about, we hope, some kind of national unity. It looks like that's the wave of the future. We are the safest people on earth against the designs of the monopoly capitalists, because they just can't reach out when their own economy is shaking. So many strikes, so many industries going out of business, the dollar falling every day. Let's produce so we will be in good shape when there's no more money from USA. We can get our people here. We owe it to them to work. We will see the reports. We will call down any of those that are seen by observers failing to work and produce our land. I love you very much. 7:15 socialist classes, followed by good movie and another movie. There's four movies, I think. I don't know all the nature of all of them, but one of them is very good, has a very good theme. And maybe all of them, but I know one of them, Children of the Damned, has a very, very good theme. Thank you very much, and I love you so very much.